It's good to see everyone again this morning. Our number every week seems to be increasing slowly, and that's always good. And hopefully I saw where the Venice Church of Christ are going back to their regular schedule in the 1st of October. And so the eldership have continuously been looking at this. And so hopefully the time will come soon that we can get back to what we're used to. And hopefully this will be something we've never gotten too used to. When we look in the text that was read, that Brother Isaac read, we see that Paul addresses, by inspirational, the functional headship of man. He says, as God is the head of Christ, Christ is the head of man, and man is the head of woman. And God has given man the leadership role within the family and within the church. And the Bible tells us here in 1 Corinthians 11, one of those reasons is that man was created first. He is in the image and glory of God. And Paul goes on to say the woman is the glory of man. So the order of creation is one of those reasons because that God gave that leadership to man. The other one is found in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 13 and 14. And there we read Paul writing, "For Adam was formed first, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgressions." And so it seems from those passages that the reason that God gave man headship in the family, headship in the church, is one, the order of creation, and secondly, because Eve was deceived there by the serpent in the Garden of Eden. And so both of those come from the time of creation. I've often wondered, where was Adam in this? Because he obviously ate of that fruit that God commanded that they did not eat of. And in my mind, I just sort of thought that Adam knew he shouldn't have eaten it, and he chose not to. And he followed the headship of the woman, a lot of different explanations, but whatever it was, God saw a difference here. And so he gave the headship of a man, the headship in the family and within the church. And so we have responsibilities, men, responsibilities that in some way are universal for every man, whether you're Christian, Hebrew, follow Confucius or a Buddhist, or you're a Muslim, all men are subject to certain responsibilities. And so I think that those fall into four categories, and we'll talk about those in a moment. And I'm going to call those primary responsibilities. These are responsibilities, I said, that fall upon the shoulders of every man. And then there's secondary responsibilities that I think fall upon in some way because of our faith. And though the last one may fall into the primary as well, but there's four responsibilities that are secondary. So the first primary responsibility are those that are responsibilities that man must do for himself and for his family. They're fundamental, they're basic. These are, as I said, are responsibilities of every man and every nation. The first, the man has the primary responsibility to serve God. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13, Solomon in his wisdom said, "The whole of man," some translations put in "the whole duty of man," but "the whole of man is to fear God and to keep his commandments." And so as a man, obviously that applies to women as well, but as a man, one of our primary responsibilities is to serve God. In Romans chapter 1, verse 18 and 19, Paul revealed that God has made himself known. It's not like we're out here searching for something that we have no evidence of. He says in Romans chapter 1, beginning in verse 18, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. In other words, God has revealed himself. In Psalms, I believe Psalm 18, he talks about the creation reveals God. And so because God has revealed himself naturally, not in a special revelation as we talked about last week, but in a natural revelation, God has revealed himself. So a primary responsibility for all men in this context of this lesson is to seek and serve God. Well, let's just think about that in a practical aspect. You know, if God has made man the head of the family, that suggests that there is a hierarchical authority in the family. In other words, you know, the old famous Harry Truman thing, the buck stops here. You know, man has been given that leadership role. I think a man's foolish, a husband's foolish, if he doesn't take input from his wife. But that final decision rests, God's going to rest, hold God, the man responsible for the final decision in the family. And so here I am a husband, here I am a father, and I don't respect the authority of God. And my wife sees that I don't respect the authority of God. My children see that I don't respect the authority of God. How can I, in any aspect of reason, expect them to respect my authority? How can I teach my children to respect authority when in my life I don't show an example that I respect authority? Can't do that, can you? And it would be foolish for a husband or a wife or a man to think that. How can I expect others to respect authority when I do not respect authority? So when a man faithfully serves God, he shows others that he respects authority. When a man serves God, he demonstrates to his wife, to his children, that he may be the authority in the home, but much like the centurion told Jesus, I am also under authority. In other words, he is under authority as well. So a primary responsibility of every male, every man on this world, in this earth, is to seek and serve God. Because everything else sort of flows from that. Remember Jesus said, he said that the scribe asked him, what is the greatest commandment? Jesus said, to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, thy soul, thy mind. The second is to love your neighbor as yourself. And in Matthew, he records, and all the law and prophets hang on these two passages, these two commands. In other words, everything else in life flows down from loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And of course, that includes obeying him and loving our fellow man. So, primary responsibility of all men is to seek and serve God. Another primary responsibility of a man is to make sure his family is provided for. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8, but if anyone does not provide for his relatives, especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. That word deny there is a pretty strong word. It's also used in Jude verse 4, where we read, for certain people have crept in unnoticed who long ago were designated for this condemnation, ungodly people who pervert the grace of our God into sensuality, and notice, and deny our only Master and Lord Jesus Christ. So here that same word is used to those that would pervert the gospel, try to draw people away from the gospel, that did not live as the gospel directed, but lived sensuously and immorally. And Paul says, or Jude said, and they deny our only Master and Lord Jesus Christ. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 11 through 13, Paul writes, and essentially what he says that if to deny the faith is to deny Christ, and those who deny Christ will be denied by him. Notice, This is a faithful saying, for if we died with him, we shall also live with him. If we endure, we shall also reign with him. If we deny him, he will also deny us. If we are faithless, he remains faithful. He cannot deny himself. And what Paul seems to be saying there is, you turn your back on God, God's going to turn his back on you, because that's what he has to do. He cannot deny the fact that God cannot fellowship sin. In other words, there's no gray area there. When we turn our back upon God, when we turn our back on providing for our family, when we turn our back on serving God, God has to be faithful to himself. And one of the primary responsibilities is for a man to make sure his a husband, a father, to make sure that his family is provided for. And the text even takes it further than our immediate family. Notice what it says. It says, if anyone does not provide for his relatives. In other words, I'm getting to the age where my mother is getting older. I know it's hard to believe. But when I'm 70 and my mom's still alive, I'm realizing she's getting up there in years. And I have the responsibility by God to make sure that she has what she needs. But my dad provided for her. That even now, though he's been dead over 10 years, because he provided for his family, I don't have to provide for my mom. Materially, I might have to help her with things that she can't do physically, or help her to do makes decisions or things like, not that she's not capable. I'm not going there. but the point being is, here's my father that made sure that even when he was gone, that my mother would be taken care of. And so I don't have to do that. But if circumstances arose that she couldn't do that, then God says it's my responsibility to honor my father and my mother. Well, we live in, when we look at the first century culture, probably most of these husbands, most of these wives were out there, or most of these husbands, most of these fathers were out there with a hoe or digging, or they were out on a boat fishing or whatever it was to provide for their family. Well, that's not so much our culture today. We have areas where it's an agrarian culture where fathers, husbands are still out going to the fields every day. They don't do it with a hoe to a large extent, but they have tractors and machinery and things like that. We've gone more of a physical society to more of a mental society where we provide for our families by things that we know and not necessarily by everything that we do physically. And so the culture of a family in the present 21st century has changed. Sometimes families, the husband and wife, get together. They decide, you know, we would like to have these certain things. We would like to work towards these certain things. And they agree to both work. Sometimes the wife makes more than the husband. Sometimes the husband makes more than the wife. And so that whole dynamic has changed in some ways by the culture that we live in today. But yet, the husband is responsible. You know, if that wife does not work outside the home, she doesn't get to sit home and eat bonbons and watch as the stomach churns. You know, there are responsibilities that she has. And the same token, if the wife is working, the husband should expect to help that wife in those responsibilities of the home. Some of you remember my dad. My dad was a big, burly guy. I mean, and you know that phrase, a man's man, but that was my dad. I mean, he was no guff, nothing taken, you know, just a big guy. But there was a time where mom worked outside the home, and dad would help. He would cook, he would do the washing. He would help, he would make sure us boys help with the cleaning. And it wasn't as good as my mom did, and that's a thing for ladies. You know, because your husband helps and he doesn't do it as good as you do, just be thankful that he does it. And so Dad would help. And I know this is for a fact because, you know, Dad was not an athlete. He played some softball in high school. But when Mom was working, he decided he was going to wash clothes one day. And I had a pair of light gray sweatpants. And sweatpants back then, those weren't those fancy things. They were just sweatshirts with legs in them. And I had a pair of light gray sweatpants, and he washed them with a bright red shirt. And so I was the only kid in high school with pink sweatpants. That was a traumatic experience for me. But for Dad, he was just helping Mom. And so a husband must realize that it is his responsibility to make sure that his family's cared for. And however that dynamic works out doesn't relieve that husband or doesn't relieve that wife of trying to maintain and caring for that home and in the rearing of children. You know, it would seem to me a wife may obey God and honor the headship of her husband in the family. Much like, I'm just going to throw this out, you may like the president we have, you may dislike the president we have. Doesn't matter to me one way or another. That's your cassava, as they say in Ghana. But regardless of whether you like him or don't like him, we have the obligation as Christians to honor that office. And so a wife is in the same situation. Her husband may be the worst thing as far as husband that ever came along the road. But she still has the God-given command to honor his role as the husband. But let me ask you this. Do you think it would be hard for her to respect him? Or if the husband was working as hard as he could to provide for his family and his wife was sitting at home not doing anything, do you think even though he would love her as Christ loved the church, as we're going to talk about, and he would nourish her and he would cherish her, do you think it would be hard for him to respect her as his wife, even though he might respect her role? And what do you think that teaches the child in that home? You know, there's a saying out there that children marry their parents. A girl will marry someone that's some way like her dad, and a boy will marry someone that is like in some way like his mother. And I have to say, I have seen that to prove somewhat true in many, many cases, because that's what my dad's like. And I have seen where people marry someone that is different than their father, and there's just constant tension. Or I see where someone has married someone that's a whole lot different than his mother, and there's just constant tension within that young family. So all men have a responsibility to make sure, a primary responsibility, to make sure that their families are provided for. A man has the primary responsibility to maintain a proper marital relationship. Now, I'm not talking about faithfulness. We shouldn't even have to talk about that. When you marry someone, when a man marries a woman marries a man, you commit yourself to that person. All that physical stuff outside of the family, all that little, you know, innuendos that some people might play at work with another woman or another man, that's not part of what a good marriage should be. But the man has a primary responsibility, and Paul tells us that in Ephesians chapter 5, that he is to love his wife as Christ loves the church. You know, I think when we think about that, we just sort of rattle off four or five things. Oh, he died for it. He gave himself for it. He shed his blood for the church. He purchased it with the church. But we don't sit and think about how much Christ loved the church. He sacrificed for the church. Well, what does that mean? Well, I sacrifice for my wife. I don't go out with the boys on Friday night like I used to. You know, I bring home, you know, every once, you know, every 5 years, I buy her a thing of flowers on her anniversary, if I remember it, and have to put it on the counter. Christ left heaven for the church. You think about that. He gave up everything. Thought equality with God was not something to be held on to. It's what Paul tells us in Philippians chapter 2, beginning in verse 5. He sacrificed everything for the church. He allowed himself to be ridiculed. He allowed himself to be ignored. He allowed himself to be punched. He allowed himself to be beaten. He allowed himself to be nailed to a hunk of wood. And he allowed himself to be lifted up and people staring at him and laughing at him and ridiculing. That's what Christ did for the church. Husbands, do you love your wife like that? Are you willing to sacrifice for her? Paul goes on to say that a husband loves his wife as he loves himself. That's not arrogance that Paul's talking about there. It's not self-pride. It's this sense that God has given each of us for self-preservation. In other words, there is a point that we would do anything to survive. We would call on strength that we didn't even know we would have. We would go to lengths that we did not even know we could go. We would endure things that we didn't think possible in order to survive. And if you don't think that's true, just read about some of the things prisoners of war have gone through. Or political prisoners in countries where they don't have a system that protects people's rights. And then what they did through and what they did to survive. Some of the things that individuals did would make you sick to your stomach and would give you nightmares just to survive. And God says we're to love our wife like that. That we would do anything at any time in any way to make sure that she survives. That we love her as we love ourselves. And then a husband is to nourish and cherish his wife. You know, there's an illustration out there. You can tell what's important to a person by looking at their checkbook. You know, what they spend the money on. You know, it could be food, it could be recreation, it could be books, it could be vacations, or whatever it may be. That's what you cherish. That's what's important to you. Where's your wife come in the checkbook? Where does she come in your life? The text says to nourish and cherish her. You know, I think we've gotten to be a society where we don't cherish anything anymore. We sort of laugh and, well, we don't laugh, but we talk about it. And it may not be the case in your house, and maybe this is just unique to our family, but it doesn't seem like there are things that my mother has that were her mother's, her grandmother's, my dad's mother, my dad's grandmother, that she cherishes, that she has cherished. And she does that because it brings back those memories. It brings, when she sees them, you know, there's some things there where my grandmothers are like, you know, Mom, when you pass these out, you know, you can pass me by. But to her, it means something. She has cherished those. Where I think in generations today, maybe not so much. New is better. But God says we're to cherish, men are to cherish their wife. It's something that is precious. She is something that is precious. Peter's going to talk about her being a weaker vessel. You know, in 1 Peter chapter 3, God tells us that a husband is to honor her wife. We're to dwell with her, living in understanding. She's a weaker vessel. She's not my slave. She's not my servant. She's not my field hand. She is my wife. And she is to be cherished. And to understand my wife, you know what? I can watch her all day. But I'm going to have to talk to her. We're going to have to communicate. And if you know Shirley and you know our house, we struggle with that. I'll be the first. We have to force ourselves to communicate. But if we don't, we won't know what each other's feeling, what each other needs. How can I live in understanding Shirley if I don't talk to her? Peter says a husband is to honor his wife. And it's interesting, he goes on to say that she's as much a creation of God as he is, and that the husband's relationship with God is tied into his relationship, the husband's relationship with his wife. That your prayers may not be hindered. So maintain, husband, men, a primary responsibility is to maintain the proper marital relationship. The fourth primary responsibility for a man is to rear his children. And that responsibility, I believe, falls into three categories. He has the responsibility to make sure their physical needs are met. We've already talked about that. He has the responsibility to make sure their social and emotional needs are met. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. Teach your child. We're going to look at that. Proverbs 22. Train your child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. In other words, I have to teach my child some things about society, about being a good citizen. I have to teach them a trade or make sure they learn something so that when they go out, they may provide for themselves, that they're not living in my house forever. That's God's plan for them to go out and start their own family. And many believe that in that training there in Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6 has nothing to do with spiritual training, but has more to do with training them how to live life and how more of a practical thing. I don't know if I go that far, but there are those that believe it. And then also he has the responsibility, father or men do, to make sure our children's spiritual needs are met. And Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Fathers, Colossians 3 and verse 21, fathers, do not exasperate your children so that they won't become discouraged. And so men have the responsibility of training their children. That doesn't mean they have to do every aspect of it. We have public schools. We also have private schools. Some homeschool. But whatever it is, God's going to say to me, when I stand before him in the judgment, the training of our daughters, good or bad, faithful or unfaithful, is going to fall upon me. Bob, you should have done this. Bob, you shouldn't have done that. Bob, you did this well. I have that responsibility. That is one of my primary responsibilities when I begat a child. When I bring a child into this world. And there's no wiggle room on that. So those are the four primary responsibilities. Those are to all men everywhere. You're born a male, these are your responsibilities. Now there are some secondary responsibilities that seem to arise because of his faith. There's one, obeying the laws of the land. I think that can go both ways. Whether you're a Christian or not Christian, you have to obey the laws of the land. But God ties the obeying of the laws of the land, obeying our governments, with our faithfulness to God. And so the secondary responsibilities of a man are due to his faith in God. These are responsibilities to the church, to the community, and to the government. So if a man has a man has two responsibilities in the church. He has the responsibility to share the gospel. And in other words, every man has the responsibility to, Peter says, to give a defense for the things which we believe. In other words, if nothing else, to tell someone that you're a Christian and act like a Christian, and maybe tell them, well, how'd you become? I became a Christian because I believed that Jesus is the Son of God. I decided to follow him and I was baptized for the remission of my sins. In other words, we all have the responsibility to let others know that we are Christians, to share the gospel. And whatever level of expertise or whatever level of knowledge we have, we must share that. Secondly, within that, the men have the obligation, the responsibility to lead within the local congregation, which means a man should be able to lead a prayer. You know, he should be able to lead a prayer before his family and before others. He should be able to wait on the Lord's table. He should be able to give an invitation. If nothing else, you need to be baptized. He should be able to lead a song. God doesn't say you have to be a good song leader. He just says you have to, you know, you have to sing. You should be able, a man should be able to get up here when there's no one else and no one else is available to say, hey, I will do that. I won't do it well and I might be embarrassed, but this is something the Lord wants me to do and I'm going to do it. Bottom line. A Christian man, a young Christian man, should be preparing himself to serve as a deacon or an elder. If anyone aspires to be an overseer, God says he desires a noble work. The church needs elders. It needs young men to prepare themselves to be the elders of the future. To be willing to take upon that work and not pawn it off just because you don't want to do it. Men are held responsible. Because I tell you what, guys, God knows whether you're a one-talent man or a two-talent person or a five-talent person. And what do you think he's going to do if you don't use your talents? Because you're embarrassed or you're lazy or whatever the thing, or you just don't want to. What do you think God's going to do? Secondary responsibility. A man has the responsibility to help his fellow man. In James chapter 1 and verse 27, we read that pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit widows and orphans in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. That word visit there is to go and provide for their needs if there is one. Galatians chapter 6 verse 10, therefore as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28. Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give to him who he has need. And so we see here a secondary responsibility with a man providing for his family. He provides, he's to make sure his family is provided for, but also in doing so, when someone needs help, there's something there to help those that are in need. Man has a responsibility to help his fellow man. Second great commandment, love the Lord thy, or first was love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, mind, and strength. Second, love your neighbor as yourself. In Luke chapter 10, when the scribe asked Jesus, well, who's my neighbor? Jesus gave the parable of the Good Samaritan. And the scribe realized, even though he wouldn't say it, that the Samaritan was the one who loved his fellow man as himself because he helped that man in need. And then the third, or the fourth, as I combine two, secondary responsibility of a man is to obey the laws of the land. In Romans chapter 13, verse 1, Paul says, "Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities." And if you're not familiar, Paul wrote that when Nero was the emperor. If you remember, Nero was the guy that burned Rome, set Rome on fire, and then blamed it on the Christians and then persecuted them. He was not a good guy. But Paul says, "Let everyone, every soul be subject to the governing authorities." I'm going to say one thing about this. I have come to learn some things about my brethren. And sadly, I don't feel that it's good things. And when I'm talking about my brethren, I'm talking about my preaching brethren, people that are in positions of leadership, positions of authority, that would preach that all Christians must be follow the laws of the land. But I have noticed more than one that when they don't like that law, they don't follow it. Oh, it's just a conspiracy. It's just overblown by the political party. You know what I'm talking about, wearing masks. We don't have to wear masks in Auburndale. It wasn't a city directive, but in Lakeland, it's a city directive. You walk into a building, you wear a mask. You maintain social distancing. That's what the city council said. That's the law of that community. But yet I see Christians that I respect, Christians in roles of leadership, that will walk into a building and not wear a mask because I just think it's all a hoax. I think it's being portrayed politically. Well, you know, I may think the same thing. But think about this, man. Agree, disagree, that's up to you. When my child, or my grandchildren specifically for me, know that there's a directive from the leaders in my community to wear a mask when I enter into a building, and I willfully disobey that, and I tell them, you don't have to do that. It's all a hoax. It's all just a conspiracy, or whatever you want to say, whatever reason I use for that. What am I saying about Romans chapter 13? Am I saying, okay, we're to obey the laws of the land as long as we agree with them. But if we don't agree with them, then we don't have to obey them. Now, if this was something that was contrary to the word of God, I mean, obviously we obey God rather than man. But that's not the instance here. Men, we have a tremendous responsibility that God has laid upon us. We have the responsibility to seek and serve God. We have the responsibility to make sure that our family is provided for. We have the responsibility that we maintain a profitable marital relationship. We have the responsibility to raise our children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. We have the responsibility to share the gospel. We have the responsibility to take up the burden of leadership in the church. And we have the responsibility to obey the laws of the land. For our own soul's sake, and for the sake of those we have influence over. This wasn't necessarily a call to become a Christian, but it is a call to faithfulness. God expects all to be faithful. It begins, if you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, that you turn from your sin, turn to serving him, confess him before men, and then being immersed in water, that your past sins would be forgiven. And then it involves living faithfully. And as a man, part of living faithfully to God falls in the realms of these primary and secondary responsibilities. So all of us, men, we have to ask ourselves, have I been fulfilling my responsibility? And if I'm not, then I need to acknowledge it to God, and I need to seek his forgiveness. If we can help in any way, won't you come as we sing this song of encouragement?